Declare your independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines, and after a century of war,
I remember that with Master Bowman. We are still here! Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, on the bus here in Maine. Yeah, we're going to, there'll be another month or two, we'll be getting back to Arizona IA, where it's a decent time. You know, we're talking to Ray McGinnis from Vancouver, so it's like 8 o'clock there, and it's over 11 here, so I got to stay. I've been in the chair all freaking day doing interviews. All right, this is what we're going to do. Now, Ray McGinnis, we've talked to coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Now, when we did that, you know, we were getting a lot of news and what the families been asking the 9/11 Commission. They never answered. There's lawsuits ongoing, all kinds of stuff. Well, Ray McGinnis has a book, Unanswered Questions. You go to unanswered questions.ca. which stands for Canada, okay? Now, what we wanted to do is get an update on stuff because, you know, there's some. I just want to show a couple of pictures real quick before we get into it, okay, Ray? Ray, say hi. Hello.
Good to be with you. Thank you, Ray.
Okay, now this is what, you know, prompted you. I'm going, yeah, I want to talk to Ray. You know, we'll get an update on stuff. Because we went into the 20-year anniversary, he had written the book, Unanswered Questions, talking about the families, you know, going saying, you know, what's up? And I've been through this before. I was Cindy Sheehan, you know, Gold Star Families and so on, goes to Washington, D.C., and Baby Bush gets up, oh, your son died for a noble cause. And she's like, yeah, thanks. And then she goes, what noble cause? What was this noble cause he died for? He would never answer the question. So it became a big, giant campaign for years of just, what noble cause? And they go, damn it, I didn't think you'd ask that, you know? So what happened, my youngest daughter is, her and her husband and her two young sons are going to Maui in early October. Right? They're right down the beach from the town that got devastated. And there was a lot of people talking about, oh, it was, what do they call it, directed energy weapons and so on, you know, lights from the sky, and, you know, straight lightning bolts down, started fire, blah, 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 blah. Now, we've been covering this technology, and certainly you heard about it, 9/11, this happened and so on. I think it was probably, you know, something else. But the point was, is that you start covering this technology, and you find out they got, you know, 500 megawatt lasers on fighter jets. They got them on ships now. If they want to start a fire, they can start a fire, you know? And then I came across this. I just want to get this in before we go, Ray. I want to show the audience this. This is a 200 kilowatt laser cannon for cutting trees. And it's used by power companies and remote power lines there in China. So they say, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do it. I go, if they can't, those won't leave us. If they can, they are. Okay? FYI. So I'll go ahead and just, we'll take out the sound. You got to listen to the dingy music. But you have this 200-watt laser, and these are big-ass limbs. Boom! They just laser these suckers down. And then you can see them, if they could do that with a gardener from China, I'm going, you know, I'm thinking, you know, militarized versions of, they can do whatever the heck they want. So this is just, you know, they say, well, they can't do that. We mean they can't do it. freaking gardeners are doing it in China. So these 200-watt lasers just whip right through, you know, like a 10-inch log. And I'm going, wow, this is amazing. So I wanted to get that in there, you know, if they can. Now, then we'll get right to Ray, but I wanted to, you know, get caught up on my journey through this. When I first started doing radio in 2003, everybody wants to know, oh, what's your, you know, view on 9-11, 9-11, what happened 9-11, your conspiracy, how many tinfoil hats you got on 9-11. They'll go on, well, about this happened and blame that. Do I go, hey, I just got one question. Where did all the molten metal come from? Well, I go, no, I don't want, we're not talking about anything else. Until somebody tells me where all that molten metal come from, I don't even want to talk about it. You know, that's, because I learned, you know, through business and, you know, activists and stuff my whole life. By that time, heck, I was, you know, when did I start doing that? I was probably in my 40s when I started doing radio in 03 anyway. And what happened is, you don't pick a bunch of little issues, because they'll nip at those, and that one didn't do it right, and you had the wrong color paint, or some crap. I don't care. You find the one question, one. What's the best one? And the best one for me was, where did all the molten metal come from? Days, weeks after, there was so much energy put into this that while they were cleaning up World Trade Center, the excavators that were going down and picking up the rubble and the metal and so on, that they wanted to get rid of right away, by the way, you know, was dripping molten steel. And I'm going, what the crap? You know, I didn't know jet fuel did that. Then you go in and you say, all right, we'll start looking at some, you know, some pictures. These are the support beams that held up World Trade Center all over the place. And there was not just one, there was a bunch of them at greater than 45 degree angles, just cut by something. And I'm like, what the crap? Then you start looking, and now all these pictures are starting to go away as I'm looking. Then you see a bunch of these just stacked up. You know, they're putting in recycling, they're selling them to China, putting them on barges. They're getting rid of the evidence. Well, this is what you see, a bunch of these. What the crap? How did that happen? Then a BYU, Brigham Young University professor comes out, a guy named Stephen Jones, and he does a paper. Now, this guy was a physicist that was cold fusion guy of, oh, my God, and educated and knows what's up. So he comes out and he says, it was nanothermite. This is how you do this. Then we start seeing people on YouTube and other people playing with nanothermite. What made it so powerful is you get teeny tiny, as small a particle of aluminum as you can. And how I saw, the first time I saw them do it, they took a old typewriter spool, they put it on a motor underwater, had a little bit of an abrasive in the water or something, and put bars of aluminum up on it so it would grind it really super fine, and it would be this like aluminum powder, like talcum powder. So they get it as fine as they could. They made, and that stuff will go right through steel like now. Yeah, I mean, you get like, you know, 2-inch thick steel, and it, like, it wasn't even there. Just boom, goes. So then we started realizing what's happening. My senior editor, Pal Gamel, was a scientist at, you know, Arizona Department of blah, 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 knew what was up, and he knew how this was being done. So it wasn't like we didn't know. So now I get my answer to my question, was like 2006. Now, he did this, and all of a sudden, boom, he don't work at Brigham Young anymore, okay? So from the beginning, and I just did a show, you know, every other week we do a show for years, James Corbett and I, and he did 9-11 trillions following the money, following, you know, a lot of the whatever conspiracy and how physically of and so on. So we know. Now, as time goes on and we start having directed energy, chemtrails, you tinfoil hat crazy person. We don't, now they're admitting, yeah, we did it because we love you and we got global warming. And I'm like, you can't, we're like, I saw a meme, 42-0 of all the conspiracies have come true. So now, 9-11. Ray McGinnis writes the book, Unanswered Questions. And since we talked, as it went into the 20th anniversary, I want to know, all those unanswered questions the family's had and so on. You had a couple of years, you know? It's been a little while since we talked. I want to know, did they answer any of the questions, Ray? Help me out, man.
Hey, well, you know, Lori Van Auken, who was one of the family members in the family steering committee that monitored the 9/11 commission. And when you talk about how unordinary what you're pointing out in terms of the, you know, the destruction of the towers, she said, it turns out almost everything about 9/11 was out of the ordinary, including the fact that it was never properly investigated. The reason we, you know, she's pressing for a new investigation, says the reason we need a new investigation to 9/11 is because we never actually had one. The 9/11 commission was not a real investigation. It was political theater. The family members who were involved with the commission actually had more questions after the 9/11 independent commission was completed than before it was begun.
Yeah, they didn't even mention Building 7. We're all sitting there going on buildings. They didn't even put it in. I don't even know if it was even mentioned. Sure as heck not enough. That 9/11 commission was a political whitewash from the beginning. How did you guys use that in your questions? What would, did it just leave a bunch of unanswered questions, or did it generate more questions?
Well, I mean, they had more questions, and I want to put a spotlight on a detail about what happened during the 9/11 commission. I mean, I was, you know, watching the testimony, especially of the family members who lost loved ones during the commission, and Mary Fetchett, who lost her son Brad, and Mindy Kleinberg, whose husband Alan died, testified on March 31st. But I want to tell you that somebody else testified to the commission on March 31st that you may know of. This guy is Brian Jenkins of the RAND Corporation. And he told the inquiry on that solemn day that the commission began their hearings that fighting terrorists is, quote, a war fought largely in the shadows. Our efforts to destroy Al-Qaeda and its successors will take years. And Jenkins had a bio for the 9/11 commissioners. He served as a captain of the Green Berets in the Dominican Republic and later Vietnam. But the bio didn't give us information about his special forces roles. Kevin Ryan, who's done a lot of research into 9/11 in his book Another 19, points out that as a special forces soldier, Brian Jenkins was in Guatemala in 1965 with Death Squad Operation Cleanup that was going on at the same time, which was involved in kidnappings and assassinations. And Jenkins' biographical note from his book, Will Terrorists Go Nuclear? He states that with a special 7th Forces group in the Dominican Republic during the 1965 American intervention, Operation Powerback, and he was involved in that. And then, you know, he goes on trying to recruit villagers and pro-U.S. counter-guerrilla forces. So with that interesting background, he then ends up being involved with Kroll Associates, and he was involved in the security analysis for the World Trade Center and in the aftermath of the 1993 truck bombing in the North Tower. And Jenkins was positioned to design and implement the new security system for the World Trade Center complex, which could have included installation of backdoor access systems. And so he served as chairman of RAND's political science department and directed RAND's research on political violence. And at the age of 30, back in 1974, he initiated RAND Corporation Terrorism Research Program. And he wrote a paper for RAND explaining that with, quote, government terror, a nation state could employ terrorists as surrogates or proxies or deputies. And he articulated that the philosophy of terrorism, when employed by a government, terrorism, he says, is aimed at the people watching, not the actual victims. He says terrorism is theater whose aim is to enforce obedience and cooperation. And this is the normal objective of state or official terrorism. And that the success of state terrorism demands the creation of an atmosphere of fear and seeming omnipresence of the internal security apparatus. And really, you know, when you think about, I mean, he goes on, then Brian Jenkins is appointed Clinton's member of the White House Commission on Aviation Safety and Security, and he was asked about about by the Los Angeles Times. He said, we knew there was no realistic way to protect the skyscrapers from a suicide mission, And he also, interestingly, was involved, Brian Jenkins, on, he served as an advisor of the National Commission on Terrorism with Paul Bremer. Bremer goes on to become the chief guy in Iraq for George W. Bush. And Bremer and Jenkins, you know, could be the kind of people in the U.S. government itself that are kind of involved in maybe state terrorism. I mean, it's just there's like it, the in when you look at cynically from the perspective of the political theater going on with the 9/11 commission, maybe they were really bold to say, here, we're going to put some one of the people who probably should be one of the people interviewed as witnesses to ask what they knew and what their role was. But instead, he's just talking about how, oh, we're going to be fighting terrorism for many, many decades, and shaking his head about how bad it is that we just, you know, couldn't connect the dots. So it's quite unbelievable how people who should have been grilled by the 9/11 commission end up playing kind of a philosophical role to sort of set the stage for how Americans and everyone else is supposed to understand what happened.
Okay, but I got to quote Hillary Clinton about now and say this. But at this point, what does it matter? I mean, you know, we have all this and we know. Now what? And I did a show this morning with a gentleman named Riley Wagaman, and he writes under Substack Edward Slavosquat, which is kind of a Russian meme of whatever. And we were having the conversation about, you know, Ukraine, deep state and surveillance state and whatever state. And he just mentioned something. It really caught my attention. He goes, it's the spook state. You know, what are we fighting? The spook state, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's the spook state. You know, it's all these undercover special forces, CIA, sociopathic, I'll do it, send me a check and give me, you know, blonde babes and free green fees, and I'll do whatever the hell you want. And this is, they're select. It's like there's enough of them. I mean, just naturally, biologically, about 4 or 6% of people have no empathy, and it's just how they're born. That's just how they're wired. And if you cultivate that and you push it and you pay for it and whatever, you get a bunch of them, and you put them in places like these positions of influence and power like you're talking about, and access to have this stuff happen. So you don't have to convince me of this. What I'm looking for, what I'm interested in, is now what? You know, what's happening? It's got to the point to where they have hearings on, you know, 9/11. They have hearings on Ukraine. They'll have hearings on vaccines. They'll have hearings on aliens. And the people go, eh, we know, whatever. Government bad. Freedom good. Government bad. Bad, 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 bad. Now what? Where has this gone since we talked last? I want to know, because all this stuff that you're conspiracy nut, you're not conspiracy nut anymore. We're 42-0. I mean, you know, we need new conspiracies. You know, all of them come true. So now what has happened since we talked last? Is it all of a sudden it's forgotten? It's a lockdown and vaccine? It's Hunter Biden? It's Trump? It's Maui? It's, you know, Ukraine? I mean, where are we at now on 9/11? Because what do we got now? RFK Jr., Robert Kennedy's son, you know, nephew of his uncle JFK, all of a sudden running for president and doing well and bringing it all out, saying, woo, the spook state be you there. And it's, let me tell you what's up. Let me tell you why they killed my uncle. Let me tell you why they killed my dad. Let me tell you, I've seen interview, man, he is slinging it. So I'm going, okay, 9/11, I just see it as all part of a continuation of the same crap. Where are we now on this issue? You're the guy to ask, tell me.
Okay. Well, where we are now in this issue is we've had 22 years of doubling down and tripling down on the official story. And I mean, before at the very beginning, when the families, who you would think the government would be sympathetic toward, saying, yes, we think it's a good idea to have an investigation from the get-go. They spent 14 months not even wanting to have an investigation were shamed into having it. Then they hired Henry Kissinger to head it up. And then, you know, there were problems with him and so on. And so, you know, throughout the whole, you know, before the commission began, they had, Philip Zelikow heading it up, having an outline for what the commission would conclude in its report before they began the investigation. And so now we're fast forward to, under Trump, we had Attorney General Barr. I'll just read that, you know, he was the acting director and with Director of National Intelligence, Richard Grenell. And they argued that revealing anything more about Saudi connections to the 9/11 plot would imperil national security. And the administration insisted in court findings that even its justification for that security needed to remain a secret. Barr said to the judge that their revelation would reveal information that could cause the very harms my assertion of the state secrets privilege is intended to prevent. So I think that
All right, it's got to be secret. Why has it got to be secret? That's secret.
Well, in talking to some family members, I mean, I think that, like, when I put myself in the position of the family members at once, that are, you know, there's news about a lawsuit with Saudi Arabia, the government, and certain officials. Now, the government, the U.S. government, through successive administrations, has stonewalled and obstructed every possibility of trying to have the Saudi individuals or the government in court to answer the family's lawsuit regarding Saudi complicity. Why would the U.S. administration be so reluctant to have the families go after a foreign government?
Because they're buddies. Because they're in cahoots. Well, because they're, you know, co-conspirators of whatever. That's why.
Yeah, because if you end up having Saudi Arabian individuals, officials, and government officials on the stand, there might be some surprise witnesses. Well, people would say a few things, and then fingers get pointed back at the U.S. administration itself. And that is something I think that people in
Washington... Well, I tell you, now that Saudi Arabia is being all buddies with China, you know, it might change a little bit. But then Biden's buddies with China too, so I guess it doesn't matter. I don't want to, you know, lose the questions that, you know, I'm trying to get to. We've covered this so much. You know, in fact, I wanted to show you this. You know, 9/11 World Trade Center has been a topic from the beginning of Freedom's Phoenix. You know, we've been covering this for freaking ever. And it's story after story. Now, the most recent one here just a couple of days ago, this new presidential candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy, responds to backlash over his answer on if 9/11 was an inside job. So now you got an up-and-comer starting to get a lot of percentage, getting attention, you know, rivaling, he's ahead of DeSantis. And he's up there going, inside job of whatever. What? And then we got proof of controlled demolition. We got, you know, Pentagon survivor explains there was no plane. You know, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. I got gazillion. How many pages of this stuff do I got? Say, where is it at? The number of pages. Anyway, I got a bunch of pages. That is, see if I go full screen, I can tell. 33 pages of about 30, it's about 1,000 articles. We have 30 to 50 stories per page. 1,000 articles that is all about 9/11. I get it. Now what? You know, I'm past, I don't believe anything that they said. You can tell it was on purpose. You can tell that it was a conspiratorial the U.S. government sure as heck don't want to talk about it. They don't want to implicate anything. You're just a tinfoil hat wearing book writing SOB that needs, and all the professors that come up with the proof, and you're fired. So now what? It's a political issue with this Vivek Ramaswamy guy. I'm like, woo, go get some. Well, where are we at on it? What do you think?
Well, where we're at on this is that, I mean, I guess there's a question around what individuals can do. I mean, there's this Vivek Ramaswamy asking questions, and then right away the hammer comes down. And I think that for ordinary citizens, there's an opportunity. I mean, of course, you're already awake to all of this, but that there a lot of people in our society are in the habit, despite every indication that maybe Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't a lone gunman, and so on, all the way up to today regarding events of the past 3 years with the pandemic. There are people that we all, I mean, I know lots of people in my life who even if I'll have a serious conversation about them, or they've read my book, but then there they are back again watching CNN in kind of a habitual way of relaxing, maybe after a tough day, and they kind of watch the news almost as if it's entertainment, but they also treat it kind of like Moses coming down Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. And people need to snap out of it. We need to stop regarding every news story in a headline on the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN or MSNBC as beyond scrutiny. And I think that people are
it's
in this
already
habit.
Happened. I mean, yes. What do you think Tucker Carlson or, you know, Russell Brand or Joe Rogan and, you know, shows like this and stuff are? You know, I just had a conversation with James Corbett, and he produces a lot of material, and he's going to start pulling back a little bit and doing more in-depth documentaries. You know, I really encourage that because, you know, I don't need your 5-15 minutes of who cares. I need some of the good stuff. You know, the spook state thing, man, I definitely want to see something on that. So this is when I first started doing radio in 2003, what happened was there was a story that said teenagers for the first time were spending more time on the screen on their computer than in front of the television screen. And I go, woohoo, man, things are changing. Well, that only lasted until, like, the Ron Paul Revolution, like the 08 or so, and they went, oh, hell no, we're definitely got to get back control of this. So then those took over big tech, you know, which they were already doing it anyway. So here you have everybody, all the kids walk around blue face all the time with their face buried, and it's, they just BS them that way. You don't need to watch CNN. They just got Kim Kardashian telling them to get a vaccine. I mean, you know, this is how it's done. So I just need, you know, people to understand that if they set it, their mouths open, they're liars. You know, it's like they come out, you know, the Maui thing, they go, oh, it definitely wasn't a directed energy weapon or something. I'm going, what the hell do you know? I mean, whether it was or wasn't, I don't care. It's just I don't believe anything you freaking say. Now I got to look at it because you said that, you know? And the same thing with 9/11. So I'm wondering, what is the political ramifications of 9/11? Is it still an issue? It is with a lot of, you know, freedom-oriented people, but just like JFK was, you know, just like, you know, the savings and loan debacle in the late 80s, just like Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, 9/11, the housing crash in 08 and 9, you know, what's happening now, COVID, lockdown, this keeps happening. And I want to know how 9/11 is going to have an impact on people. Is it just, you know, piled up on the pile of I don't trust government? Or is there something out there? Is there a smoking gun? Is there a lawsuit that's kicking ass? Is there a family member that went postal? Is there some congressman or presidential candidate that's out there talking about it? That's why I wanted to talk to you. What's happening now?
Yeah, well, there, I mean, there's the families who are principally involved in the a lawsuit with the Saudi government, and individuals, and of course, as I've mentioned, once you have people actually in the courtroom, witnesses can be called. Maybe some Saudi official will say, "Well, I'm as defense in this case, I want to call Brian Jenkins." I don't know, but you know, other things can happen that could be unpredictable, which is why it would be good for there to be some civil suit where people can then be called, and we don't know where that would go.
Well, what happened? I mean, did they dismiss it?
Oh no, it's still being the families are still trying to get it to happen. It's not happening, and there's a bunch of judicial and legal maneuvers to prevent them from having.
So they can't go file. They go to U.S. District Court, and here I file. Boom, done. And they go, nope. Can't take it, you know, be gone.
Yeah. So there's lots of stonewalling and obstruction that's been going on for all.
Did they actually
time.
File something, or they were turned away at the desk?
There've been motions and stalling happening with there's a judge in Florida. I was reading something recently, but it's, you know, it's all this legal maneuvers, sort of where the families are in the crosshairs of all of this. This lawyer does this or this, you know, so it's all pre-trial or whether they're allowed to have a trial. Yeah. It's all that kind of stuff. So
national security,
it's all national security. This is all about national security to protect something with national security, because holy smokes, if the families and the nation found out X that's behind that curton of national security, I gather that you'd all be very upset.
Well, what is the role of the president in this? You mentioned Trump. Trump didn't do it. Didn't do what? What's he supposed to do?
No, it was under Attorney General
Barr.
Will Barr. He was also involved in you know, talking about how they couldn't have the families sue the Saudis because of national security concerns.
Okay, so if it was the right attorney general, if Trump wasn't an idiot and put up the cabinet of, oh my God, I don't know, they might as well just, you know, took it from the United Nations and then tell them who to put in or something. I mean, it was the stupidest appointments. And Barr turned out to be, you know, they, them, those. So it's an attorney general appointment that would be the solution. Is that what you're saying?
That would be a very helpful thing, and I'm not remembering who Biden's attorney general is, but I don't think he's been very helpful.
Yeah, nobody knows. Yeah. These guys, I pride myself on not knowing. I the vice president, what's her name? Camel lady. I mean, you know what? I don't care. I have no interest. What are the other solutions you think there are to this, other than you write a book about it, you publicize it, we talk about it? But I mean, what really has to happen?
Yeah. Well, what really has to happen is, I think people, more and more people need to wake up to what the truth is. And the whole question of what can grassroots democracy achieve in what seems to be more and more a trajectory of going toward more kind of restrictions on democracy, clamping down. It just seems that in both in my country and your country that freedom of speech, a whole bunch of things are going in the wrong direction. So I don't have one answer. I can tell you that over in you know, because more than Americans died on September 11th, Jeff Campbell died from the UK, and his brother Matt and Jeff Campbell's family have been fighting to reopen, to have a new autopsy and inquest into why Jeff Campbell died, and his body parts all over the place. They can't put them together. And in the UK recently, a judge a justice in London said no, you can't, we can't reopen the inquest, even though they had all kinds of really good reasons why of what happened with the World Trade Center and how the explanation of fire just doesn't cut it. But nonetheless, the judge in the UK. So it's an American problem. It's a British problem. I think it's a Canadian problem. It's a Western democracy problem of having wherever you go, wherever, I mean, if there's an Australian citizen who's trying to get justice for their loved ones that died on September 11th, they probably get the same kind of stonewalling too. So I think it's a big problem that's certainly domestic in your country, but it goes to an international question about democracies that are supposed to do the right thing, to be transparent, that are failing all over the place, never mind the pandemic as well.
And, you know, I tell you, we learned about this, because I've been an activist for a long time. It was Waco, because the people that died in Waco, you know, a bunch of the kids, a bunch of adults, everybody, you know, there was a group of people that were from the United Kingdom, I think, or Australia, or so they were foreigners. I think they were United Kingdom. And did they have standing? Did their government go, hey, you got to answer it? Nope. Next. You're done. It was like a training for 9/11. You know, there's, you know, whenever they do something, they come up with some new mental gymnastics that they come up with, why you can't and we're not, and then they put that in their pocket. Because after 9/11, I remember when I started doing radio in 03, it was right before we started the ground war in Iraq. And in Afghanistan, I think it was Afghanistan, they caught a guy, was it James Walker Lynn or something? He was a Muslim from Michigan or whatever, went to fight, you know, for the Taliban, for his faith of whatever, before America had even got in. So then when they capture these guys, they bring him in, and he's like, what's up? You know, he's all got, you know, his turbans and stuff and his gear, and he starts talking. They're like, what the heck? It wasn't a declared war. Is he a prisoner of war? Was he doing anything illegal? He was doing it the way you're supposed to. You want to go fight? Go. Then all of a sudden the U.S. gets involved. What do they do with him? They came up with enemy combatant. And that would strip you of constitutional rights, where constitutional rights in America doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not. They just make shit up, you know, and they're always going to do it. So as they build all this, you know, arrows they put in their quiver to take your rights, 9/11 was a big, giant treasure trove of Patriot Act, you know, all the rendition stuff, all of the yada, 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 yada. It's never going to stop until they're stopped. How are they going to be stopped? I don't know. What do you think? Yeah. Okay. They're going to be stopped how? Voting harder?
Well, I can point to, the co-chairs of the 9/11 Commission, Lee Hamilton and Tom Keene, said to the press that they would never have been there, that there would never have been a 9/11 Commission if it hadn't been for the families. And I know that in the case of Kristen Breitweiser, Patty Casazza, Mindy Kleinberg, and Lori Van Auken, those four widows in New Jersey found each other and started to have a conversation over their kitchen tables and going for walks. Yeah. And then they began to create like a cauldron of energy, and they said, we're going to go to Washington, D.C. And I think that they began by not sitting by themselves watching TV and trying to figure out what some TV commentator would tell them. They got energy and inspiration and ideas of a mission to get a 9/11 commission. And they kept pressing on to the present regarding a lawsuit with Saudi Arabia and asking other questions for a new investigation and so on. But the seed of all of that was because individuals met with each other and started having conversations in cafes and kitchen tables, going for walks together. And I think that individual citizens need to make sure that in this time we've gone through, you know, being encouraged to be in our little bubbles and everything else the last 3 years, people need to find other people and start having conversations and ask themselves what they want to do about something, because it has to start with the people we know. It's something that we, you know, then you can build some support for your initiative. Otherwise, you know, you're just somebody phoning your member of Congress, and however satisfying or that is or isn't, you know, you're on your own, you know. And,
well, is it 9/11 a thing? You know, I'm just showing some of the coverage that we've done. This is back, you know, in 09. You know, we've been covering this for long time. There's a lot. I can go on and on and on about it. But, you know, what is it, this issue has legs at all in Canada or not?
Well, it has some interest among a number of us that the world changed because of suddenly all kinds of NATO countries, never mind Ukraine, but all kinds of NATO countries after 9/11 were all asked to belly up to the bar with much bigger defense budgets and so on and take that money that was being spent on other projects like education and parks and so on, and put that towards defense. So all kinds of nations have shifted their energy and money to defense since 9/11. And I think that I want to also mention there are some key players over the decades who, you know, I mean, whether it's Zbigniew Brzezinski or Henry Kissinger or whoever, there's numbers of people that are all connected to you know, the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and so on. And it seems that there's, you know, interest in moving a number of things along and they find these events like 9/11 or the pandemic very their crises that they find great opportunity to advance their agendas, you know, the war in Iraq or Afghanistan or, you know, Middle East oil, whatever it is. I mean, I read something that Rand Corporation was writing some paper, I think around 2018 or 19, about wouldn't it be great to kind of create a situation, maybe a war with Ukraine for Russia to sort of weaken Russia militarily and whatever else. So, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, those are just papers and those are just conversations people are having and doesn't necessarily lead to anything. But I think that people can see that there are people in very key think tanks that seem to be able to be very successful in getting their agendas moving forward from decade to decade.
You know, I look at some of these headlines, you know, like judge airlines can't question FBI 9/11 suits. You know, it goes on. And I forgot about a lot of this stuff, but it's important to keep this. It's just like JFK stuff. You know, I have, Jacob Hornberger, from the Future of Freedom Foundation, on, and that's all his whole thing is JFK, and now it's starting to become a big thing again, and all of a sudden you get the, yeah, CIA did it, yeah, Dulles was fired by JFK, and then he was the one in charge of the Warren Commission, while all the other guys were Supreme Court justices and senators and congressmen, and they're busy, and he's the only guy that was doing it the whole time. So I'm just like, wow, this is so, there's something systemic. There's something way more basic, fundamental. It's not going to get better. They, them, those that won't leave us alone. They, who are they? The ones that won't leave me alone. And in 9/11 was, they didn't leave us alone, you know, and that propagated all kinds of stuff. And then on top of that, we get the, you know, financial screwing us in 8-9, and then the lockdown, the pandemic, which you're trying to do again. Oh man, I don't know, we need to put masks back on. You know, there's something else. I mean, being this close to this and the things that you talk about and that you've written about and the questions not answered, you think we're going to get answered questions on anything else? There's something else. You're in Canada, Trudeau a hero? I mean, how well's he doing? How is your trucker convoy stuff? I mean, come on, man. There has to be another solution other than just bitching about it. What do you think is going to take for people to not have the next thing and the next thing and the next thing? Because we're about due for a next thing. You know, I'm just waiting for aliens to show up. I mean, you know, I knew they were scraping the bottom of the barrel when they did that one. But, you know, what has to happen? I mean, come on, man. Say it!
Well, in Canada, we have our Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, who's on the Board of Trustees of the World Economic Forum. And the World Economic Forum has been quite interested in all that's been going on the past few years with the pandemic. And I think that, you know, I mean, and the opposition leader, I mean, who happens to be a conservative, Pierre Poilievre, raised some questions about, you know, saying, you know, if his government is elected, there will be no members of his, you know, no party members who are elected who will be involved with the World Economic Forum. They won't be going to Davos and so on. They won't be taking, you know, instruction or inspiration from what's going over there in Switzerland. And the reaction of the media in Canada has been very severe. How dare he? He's a conspiracy theorist. And that's an indication that he's getting pretty close to some sort of hot button that they don't want people to be paying attention to.
Well, what do the people say about it? Are they like, yeah, what he said? You know, we're going to go vote harder on their computers. I mean, I have in Argentina, a libertarian just won the primary, one of the major parties. It might become, you know, president of Argentina and enact all kinds of get rid of the central bank of Argentina and do it. What the crap? Well, it always happens that way. The people rise up, which is why they got to get in charge of the counting computers. So how valid are your elections, do you think, in Canada? Do you have the same kind of problems, confidence in them like we have here in America, or what? There's a guy, he's getting a lot of attention. Does he have a chance of winning? What's his popularity?
He's got 37-38%.
Really?
The Liberals 28% right now. We have, of course, five different parties that run, one in Quebec. The Liberals are not doing well under Trudeau for a whole host of reasons. And so it's interesting. I don't think that Pierre Poilievre, as the opposition leader, conservative opposition leader, would talk about the World Economic Forum. I mean, the Klaus Schwab has bragged, and it's all on video, bragged about how half of the Liberal cabinet members are all World Economic Forum graduates. So, you know, it's right there for people to see. So, but I don't think Poilievre would take the political gamble of raising the matter of the WEF if he wasn't satisfied that there are actually quite many Canadians who think that there has been a problem with what's happened with that organization and the pandemic response, you know, the eagerness for lockdowns. Before we had the pandemic, we had 50 years of emergency management protocol response to any pandemic, and it never involved lockdowns. And all of a sudden, we threw the binders out the window and did lockdowns across Canada as you did down in the States. So
a few weeks ago, I interviewed a Canadian mounted policewoman that, you know, would refuse to get the vaccine. She was like, not doing it. Well, yeah, nope, not doing it, nope. So then there was a police or law enforcement group that, you know, defend the blue line of something. I can't remember. But she had a fascinating story, and I got the idea of how Canada works in their law enforcement. You know, what's the hierarchy and who they take their orders from and where this came from and that kind of thing. But all the people I talked to from Canada, there's really their idea of activism, it all culminated in the trucker convoy. And that was kind of it. Other than that, if it wasn't as individuals, they don't do it. As a group, they did. But there really was a lot of compliance going on in Canada, as there was in America. But as we did the Love Bus Liberty Tour, that's, you know, we're just winding that up. As we went around the country in the rural areas, there was a lot of resistance and opposition of suck it. And it's just in the cities that it really had a hold, and of course at all the government institutions like schools, which is why homeschooling really shot up. So in Canada, what do you think amongst your friends and neighbors and in your community? Are they compliers? Were they resistant? Are they public with their resistance? What kind of resistance you think you're going to get in Canada?
I think that, early on there was probably, 80% or more were really compliant. And I think that now, as far as if the vaccine uptake is any indication, all told, unvaccinated, one dose or two dose is about 50%. You've only got more than 50% who are 50% who are getting, on their seventh dose or their fifth dose or whatever it is.
Dead.
So you've got it's really a divided country regarding that. I want to say also that we have four men who were accused on the Coots, Alberta, Sweetgrass, Montana border on Valentine's Day of 2022 of conspiracy to commit murder of Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers who've now been in custody, but not in jail, but in a remand center for 550 days with no bail granted and no trial date. And so there's some amount of energy regarding that case that's going on in the country, as well as other things. So there is some movement, and I think that that's part of the resilience or ascendance of the Conservative Party, that there's enough people that have just had it with what's going on with the government.
Had the January 6th thing. I got subpoenaed by the January 6th trial. You know, they were bugging me for a year. I mean, Eric, because I did a show on January 6th with some activists from Arizona. And, you know, that's a long story. But the FBI can't use that as evidence unless I certify the MP3 file of it. I go, I'm not going to certify it. I'm on it. You know, I get self-incrimination. I got Fifth Amendment, suck it. And then they go, no, you can't. I go, yeah, I can. They go, no, you can't. Yeah, I can. No, you can't. Yeah, I can for like a year. Yeah. Then right at Christmas last year, they send me, you know, they give me a subpoena, go to, and I just went ahead and booked my flight with the travel agent before I even talked to them, you know, their FBI travel guy. And I go, yep, I'll see you. They go, well, you, I go, nope, Fifth Amendment. Now I don't even need an attorney. I'm just going to do it. Rock and roll. I get there. And then after I go to the court and they weren't there, they pushed it back a few hours. They said, well, you can take your Uber back to the hotel room that they paid for, you know, paid for my trip, gave me $60 a day per diem. And then they go, never mind, you can go home. After bugging me for over a year, I mean, I'm like, no, I didn't do it.
Did you get at least the hamburger out of it or something?
Yes. Got some pizza. You know, this is it. The thing was, is that always, this is my philosophy. Make them make you and make them say it. Say it, you know. So this is, it's this kind of tactic that they use. And I knew that these younger podcasters and authors, people such as you and other, they think that they just have to comply. And I go, no, I don't. I got, you know, now that was one thing about the mounted policewoman. She made a point that Canada has some kind of a Bill of Rights that people, they don't even know. You know, what is that?
It's the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and we have a Bill of Rights. And I mean, it was basically shredded by the government, in fact, you know, with the pandemic measures, because one of the things that we have the right to is to enter, is to leave and enter our own country. Which means, doesn't matter, you know, all this vaccine passport stuff was completely against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, because nobody's, you know, even on the passport, the Canadian passport says the bearer has the right to proceed, you know, but no, but unless you've got
doesn't seem to matter, does it?
Yeah, but unless you've got your two doses of the vaccine, apparently you're not allowed to proceed. So, you know, this is all highly unconstitutional, but the problem we have with all of that is that you've got judges in the legal system who maybe are frightened and scared too about the virus and seen too many shows of people on ventilators, and they kind of seem to be suspending their judicial.
You know, the people that got hung for Nuremberg, they were doctors, nurses, judges, politicians that did exactly this stuff. You know, that's where informed consent came from. You know, this is, I mean, they just dozens and dozens, and they just hung them. You know, I'm like, wow, this is, they must feel like made men and women that they don't have anything to worry about. So I it's just, where did that go? That's where the spook state came out, you know, after World War II, to make sure they get away with this crap. So I keep asking the same question. I'm trying to get an answer from you. It, you know, 9/11 got your fancy. You know, you wanted to make sure you studied that, and you wanted to get, you know, families, you know, the unanswered questions of that was important to you as a Canadian for a reason. And I'm wondering what it is and what you think the solution is. You know, whine really loud? I'm you know, I'm not for violence. Yeah. I'm not, my thing, I tell you, my solution is ignore them. You know, I break with thee, and, you know, come find me on Occupy the Land of how you going to get taxes out of me when I don't do anything. I mean, you know, well, I grow my own food, educate my own kids, build my own house. Now what? You know? So it's just, government does not like being ignored. They refuse to be ignored. You know, so I'm just wondering, in a big, giant country like Canada, it's not like you don't have enough land, man. I mean, you know, what is it you think? And, you know, you and I aren't too different in age. You know, I'm 62. You know, I got some years left in me, but, I mean, it's towards the end. I'm not leaving this fight to my grandkids. What is the fight? What are you going to do to, you know, for grandchildren? You know, what's your legacy on this?
Well, I mean, I wrote the book so that people, you know, if we don't know our history, if we don't get the story right, we're going to repeat the mistakes of the past. And so I wrote the book to try and get people to read the book to revisit this. I mean, it's less for the people in some ways like you who already figured this out, but I'm trying to reach people kind of like who maybe are sitting on the fence or could possibly be persuaded to revisit this, who maybe have assumed, oh, you know, a conspiracy theory. But when I've said to people, but look, these families lost loved ones, and these were their questions, not some funny question that somebody, you know, in a cave made up. These are people that lost loved ones, and these are their questions about why World Trade Center 7 collapsed in 7 seconds and so on. And then somehow there are more people that say, oh, you know, so it's a slow process of getting more and more people. I listened to some people talk about how they'd given my book to someone in Saskatchewan, and that person at first said, I don't need to read this. And then they explained why it was important. And then they, it's like, you got to get people past the kind of knee jerk, oh, it's a conspiracy theory thing. No, this is a story that we need to get right, or else we are already repeating our mistakes, because look at where we are now in 2023.
Yeah, no, see, this is my point, and why I'm so frustrated is that it's, I used to be thinking that, well, everybody's a freedom oriented individual. They just don't know it yet, you know? And now I'm like, yeah, with a lot of the circumstances, it does wake up a lot of people in the work you do and you did. And, you know, I'm sure it's a benefit. You know, it's not a negative benefit. How big it is doesn't matter. I mean, it has a positive. It added to the zeitgeist of changing, you know, people know what's up. But I'm not trying to save anybody anymore. You know, I there's plenty enough people that get it, and they're the ones that are going to make it. I tell you what gives me hope. The Ron Paul Levolution was an obvious spontaneous order thing. You know, MAGA was kind of, you know, same kind of thing, more conservative kind of whatever. But it's the youth that just take care of business. You know, they don't care. They're not trying to fit in or fix it or fear of missing out or something. They're just going doing their own thing and, getting an RV and go finding a piece of land or something. But it is, I'm not trying to fix a system that is not broken. It's made broken. The way it is to do what they want. I'm not going to fix it. How are you going to fix it? So
I'm
the boycott. That's what gave that's what gave me a lot of encouragement was the boycotts. You piss somebody off, they went super trans, woke, you know, my pronouns, you know, I got pronouns, my pronouns are I told you so, okay? So this is, you know, when you have, you know, the Bud Light thing, you know, happens and all this other stuff, the people realized how powerful wallet voting is. And I've had walletvoting.com for decades. Just
wait. Well, I just got asked by one of the people on Twitter who follows me, and I follow them, and they talked about a tax revolt in Canada. That'd be interesting to see where that would go. But I mean, I've watched just the last few days. There's some guy who's in Washington, in Wall Street. I'm not sure if he lives in Wall Street, but his handle has to do with that. But he has one young person, you know, 20-something, 30-something from Canada, after the next, talking about how they are not coping with the financial, the kind of the world that's happened over the last few years. They're not making it. They are sinking like a stone. They can't make, you know, can't ever leave their home with their parents, and they're 28 years old or whatever it is. And I think that part of the resurgence of a conservative movement in Canada is being spearheaded by people in their 20s. And that's a real change, because for decades in Canada, people in their 20s would be, you know, self-described liberals and progressives. Well, now there's more and more people in their 20s who are just seeing that the financial situation and the way that things are working with inflation and everything else is not working for them. So there's going to be a change with all that energy.
There has to be. You know, I'm looking forward to when they start to realize that it's not going to be a tax revolt. It's going to be, I'm not using your currency revolt. You know, I'm doing my own crypto. I'm doing my own silver. I'm doing my own barter. I'm doing, because every transaction, the government gets a cut of it. If you just stop using their money, boom, You don't have anything to tax. You know, this is, they're just going to raise taxes. They don't need taxes. They just print more money. The tax is inflation. You know, you stop using their money, it goes away. And people are going to realize that sooner or later. They always do. And when it does, they go, wait. We got a central bank digital. It's better. Universal basic entitlement. We give you money. Fill out. Look into the orb. I mean, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, it's just so dystopian, and it's happening. So that's why being in the middle of this particular issue, as a Canadian, looking at 9/11 and how it had an impact on the world and certainly North America, that, you know, you have to have witnessed and understood the depravity of government in general, that they're not there to protect individual rights. They're not there to do the right thing, and they're just any excuse to have a war so they can launder money through country du jour. And so I just, if you're not seeing what a real solution is, talking about the problem over and over and over, I mean, I can list a ton of these. Every 3 or 4 years they have these. You know, in our lifetime, you're witness to this. You see it one after another after another. 9/11 was a big deal, but there were big deals before. There are big deals since. What have we learned? We'll leave it on that. You know, give it to you, man. What have we learned, and what do you think needs to be done by Generation Next? Read your book.
Well, I think people need to turn off their TVs and start having conversation with other people, finding the people who are saying, are you noticing what I'm noticing? And start having those synergies to have some good conversations, because it's out of those conversations that people will give birth to some new ideas and some new directions. Just like you're talking to me about, maybe, you know, if I come out to Maine or Arizona, or you come up here, we can, you know, maybe I'll make you a roast beef dinner, or you'll give me a haircut. Well, and it won't be any taxes.
Boom, 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 boom. You know what we started? We have Corbin and I. In fact, they'll push this. It's blackmarketfridays.com. Because we used to have Black Market Friday, and it was the day after Thanksgiving here, that you alternative currencies for alternative vendors and alternative, you know, learn where you can get your food from, the local farmer kind of thing. And we go, once a year is not enough. We got to do it every Friday. And it started blackmarketfridays.com, goes to agris.market. And I've been screaming, it's going to be a food thing. This thing's going to be a food thing, because you're going to need to get food. It's going to be a food thing. I guarantee it. So all of a sudden, you started seeing, just in the last week or so, all these people that are providing food. They're packaging food. They're slaughtering cows. We got grass-fed blah, blah, beef of, you know, never mind, we got it. And I'm going, the economy that starts with this agorist, you know, freedom-oriented whatever, and trading silver and bartering foot massages or whatever, is going to be about food. I guarantee it. Mark my words, it's going to be a food thing. So if you're not finding out where you're going to get your food, man, I pity the fool, because here we go. FYI.
I agree with you. I think that's really important. So, you know, plant your garden soon.
Well, to get the book, I tried to see how I could get the book, and it looked like you wanted me to go to the bookstore to order it.
No, I'm going to send you a copy. Have you not got a copy?
No, I was okay. Trying to get okay. One last time, and then, you know, it was like work, you know. But, you know, you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and it'll have, you know, my address in Phoenix or in Arizona, you know, where you can send it. You go at the bottom of freedomsphoenix.com, all the way down at the bottom, and it has our P.O. box there. But the, how would other people that want to get it, and we yakking about it so much, how are they going to get it?
Yeah. Well, if they want to read an ebook, they have to go to Amazon, get a paperback from Amazon. Otherwise, they can order it, through their local bookstores. They should be able to, but I know that there are some bookstores, even in Canada, that will not.
Right.
You know, my book is It's
has 9/11 in the title.
It's not the edgiest book of all the books about 9/11, but it certainly raises some questions. And just looking at the endorsements, numbers of bookstores, staff say, no, we're not going to stock this book here. So it's very interesting, 22 years on, how it's a struggle to get people to take off the conspiracy theory tinfoil hat glasses and see that there's more to be read and not.
Well, let me see if we got it up here. I want to, because Donna's really good at that, about putting up. Let's see. Yep, there she's got it. Okay, you go to today's show, freemansphoenix.com at the top right. Declare your independence of the Ernest Hancock icon up there. Yeah, I'll show you. And you go up here, declare your independence of Ernest Hancock. Ray McGinnis, August 16th, 2023. You click into that, and it'll have the podcast, today, the MP4, and then the MP3 up there here in a little bit when I get done doing everything. And then you scroll down, and there they are. Amazon, paperback, hardcover, and I think she had, and you can also get the, we'll go to the hardcover, and you can get the audiobook for like $6.99 or something. Yeah, there it is. Donna, woman. Yeah. Donna takes care of business. All right.
That's good.
So there you go. You go into the archive, and there it is. And then, well, heck, I could have done it here. $43, send me a free one.
Yeah.
You go to anywhere on Freedom's Phoenix, you go down to the bottom here. There's the address right there.
That's great. I'll send you a copy. I'll sign it for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Give me a chance to mention it again. Well, this is, I apologize for being so, after a whole freaking day sitting in the chair, man. Oh, my God. But the, my thing is that I'm just so frustrated with the everything. It's always this. It's, what do we got? After World War II, then we had this police action, whatever crap, of Korean War, Vietnam, we got Watergate. I remember OPEC and the oil embargoes and all this other crap, in my lifetime, and Queen singing Hammerfall. I grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, Then you have Iran-Contra, the savings and loan scandal and hit Arizona really hard. Then you got Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, 9/11, the financial crash in 8 and 9, the pandemic, war, and there's wars throughout there the whole time. Only new one to get started during Trump. Seriously. And then we have, stuff that's coming up next. It's going to be alien invasions, They got distraction, So I'm really looking for a real solution, And violence is not the answer. That's what they want. They need you to, do something stupid so they can justify their crap. What if you just ignored them? What if you bypassed them? What if you paralleled economy? What if you took the realization that you're trying to get people to understand so we don't keep repeating this stuff and you just walk away? You just go, I'm good. We're going to do something different. So that's my advocacy. Ray McGinnis, unanswered questions.ca for Canada. Canada. So go ahead and you go check that out. You can get it. You go to freedomsphoenix.com or declare your independence with ErnestHancock.com. At the top right, you'll see there, look up Ray McGinnis. Far on the right, you can go down as a list by guest, and you can go ahead for August 16th, 2023. Has the links on Amazon, or you just go to Amazon.com. Unanswered questions. Boom. It comes up, Ray McGinnis. Ray, thanks for coming on. You got any final words you want to say, somebody, something?
Well, I'm just very grateful to be on your show, and it's great to talk with you about this wide-ranging, conversation. We didn't even talk about the people in World War II and how the people in Washington, D.C. knew, had the heads up about the attack in Pearl Harbor, but the fleet in the Pacific didn't know. So, we have a lot of work to do, and I think it's good that you have this show, because people need to keep thinking and need to keep caring.
I care, just not the way they go. You have to care. Oh, yeah. And you got to care this way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no. Ray McGinnis. Ray, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate, let me get my blood pressure up.
Okay, excellent. Okay.
Peace.
See you again. Bye. Okay, bye-bye.